You have reached the 77th Street DMS 100. Serving codes 238-439-492-567-630-680-745, 748-833-836-921. Thank you very much.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
How are you doing there, all?
Out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gilan.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do indeed. Good evening.
Well, it's a chilly night. It's a night hopefully you're bundled up snugly listening to the radio, as people do. Alex, you're raising your index finger, which tells me that you have something to say.
Yeah, the message that was played, the telephone message, that was a 9901 number, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, that was Elvis.
That's amazing. Can you divulge if that's an active 9901 exchange identification number at a switch?
I cannot, but any of our listeners can dial 718, one of the exchanges that he listed, followed by 9901, and see if he's still there. Used to be that almost every exchange in New York, if you added the suffix 9901 at the end of it, you'd get a recording like that, not with Elvis, that was a weird one, but you get a recording that basically would identify every single exchange in the central office. Now, there are so many exchanges these days, maybe they don't do that anymore, but that used to be one of many fun phone company recordings.
Yeah, I just tried it with 212-279-9901 to see if that was still active, and it was. So I think the 9901s are probably still active test lines.
Now, when you say you checked 212-279 to see if it's still active, you're going back into time quite a bit. You're going way past the Wall Street days of WBAI. You're going past the Harlem days. You're going all the way back to 35th Street. By Penn Station. That's when we used to have the 279 phone number. So
that's
what you're referring to.
That's what I was referencing, exactly, yeah. You've got an elephant-like memory there, Emmanuel.
Well, you're the one that dialed the number, so, you know, you get
true.
Some credit there, too. But, yeah, you know, it might work. It tended to be in the New York area. You know, I wish it was something that was standardized nationwide. We also had other fun phone numbers, too, like, for instance, the suffix 9970 oftentimes is always busy. It's just a test of the busy signal. 9971, a test of the reorder, fast busy. 9979, you get a sweep tone, which was great for testing equipment. And there were a bunch of others as well. There were loops, there were business office shortcuts, things like that. But these days you don't know what you're dialing. You know, you could dial, somebody could have the phone number 9901 and you know, it goes to their business or their home instead of to the phone company. So it used to be everything starting with 99 was phone company related. It used to be that every payphone, the suffix began with a 9, sometimes an 8, but mostly a 9. And these days, you can't even call payphones if you could even find a payphone. All right, but I'm just going to start complaining if we keep reminiscing about things like this. Let's look to the future, okay? We have some breaking news, and this is important, folks, so pay attention, all right? All kidding aside. Disney's Hulu plus live TV service and Fubo to merge in surprise deal ending Venmo lawsuit. What the hell did I just say? There are so many words in there that are not words. Hulu, Fubo, Venmo, all in the same headline. What, CNN put this out, and they it wasn't a joke. This is real. All right, let's see if we can decipher this. Disney's Hulu. All right, so Hulu, I know what Hulu is. That is a streaming service. Used to be free. Now they want money for everything, and it's no fun anymore. And they're owned by Disney, apparently. I missed that. Okay, so Disney took over Hulu. All right, Disney's Hulu plus live TV service. Now, they're not referring to just generic live TV. They're referring to something called live TV service. Does anybody know what that is?
No, not me.
Okay, everyone's as clueless as I am. That's comforting.
But this is like a cord-cutting phenomenon, I think, because Hulu was around for really quite some time.
It was one of the first.
From early broadband internet rollout days, I guess, when people were looking for alternatives, and I guess that acquisition changed their model, and then now they have these sort of other things that are business areas they want to expand or control better.
Well, Hulu used to be great for seeing television programs that you might have missed on free TV. You know, free TV being broadcast TV. So you were able to just go to Hulu, figure out what show you wanted to see, and you'd see the show. Then they said, okay, you know what? We're going to start adding advertisements to this, advertisements that you can't skip easily. And, you know, it might not be as many ads as on TV, but we're still going to barrage you with this. And then they started demanding that you subscribe and then that you pay. And, you know, we're still talking about free television here. Now, I know they do more things as well as free television,
some
but still.
Some of that, too, we can't totally chalk up to any one sort of leadership choice or mission that they changed along the way. A lot of it is market forces, because think about how much money was being made on other streaming platforms where they were running ads already, targeted ads, every kind of ad, you know, that kind of stuff. So uh-huh. it sort of could have also been something they were forced into, and further sort of ownership stuff and consolidation just kind of makes that just an easier thing to institute.
Not to cut you off here, but we're only
Please.
A third of the way through the headline, and we still don't know what live TV is.
What is
what live TV service? Has anyone out there researched this? Go ahead, Gila.
So Hulu has been primarily a streaming platform, but as so many of the streaming services have, they've also created a way to watch live TV, sporting events, things of that nature. So, you know, you can watch your FX on Hulu the next day, or theoretically you can watch live. It fascinates me the way that so many things that we all used to do very simply have been balkanized into all the different ways you can do them now.
Can I just stop you for a second here? Because you said one of my pet peeves here. You said FX on Hulu. I have FX. I pay for FX, you know, and I don't see the shows that supposedly are FX. FX on Hulu. What does that mean? It's on Hulu. It's not on FX. So why do you call it FX on Hulu? You should just call it Hulu and stop giving me the impression that I can see it because I have FX. You know, it really annoys me. Little things like this.
Well, I mean, it's a branding and marketing thing. You know, if what we do in the shadows, which we love.
Perfect example.
Right.
I wanted to watch that program, and I couldn't do it.
Yep.
Do you have Hulu?
No, I don't have Hulu. I'm not an idiot.
Well, there's your problem. But, I have Hulu.
I have
Thank
FX.
You.
And if a show is FX on Hulu, by definition and legally, Alex, back me up on this, it should be available to somebody with FX, because FX is on Hulu.
No, it's FX on Hulu as opposed to What We Do in the Shadows on Amazon Prime or What We Do in the Shadows on Netflix. The FX stuff is on Hulu.
But it's not on FX.
It's an exclusivity thing. If you can find FX stuff on Hulu, if you have Hulu, not FX is going to be your free pass into the Hulu network.
I don't want to argue about this for the whole hour, but why is it called FX if it's not on FX?
It's FX. It's the
Is it FX programming? Did they produce it?
Yes, it's the FX original programming. Then its streaming home is on Hulu.
What makes it FX?
It's the...
You can't answer that, can you?
Yeah, no, I can't. So it's Reservoir Dogs. It's What We Do in the Shadows.
Reservation Dogs. Reservation Dogs. You see how...
Reservoir Dogs is something entirely different.
Yeah.
That's
what confusion will do to you.
Minded when I get snarky.
That's what confusion will do to you. You'll mix up FX on Hulu with FX and Reservation Dogs and Reservoir Dogs.
So, yes, FX Original Programming's exclusive streaming home is on Hulu. That's all.
You know what? I don't care. Nothing there I want to see anyway. But we still... Okay, so what is live TV? Because the L is capitalized. So that's some kind of a brand, Hulu plus live TV service?
It's another programming option you can opt into if you want to see probably some sporting events, probably other live TV things that are going on.
Okay.
Instead of cable, YouTube TV, whatever, or even a little broadcast antenna, you can choose the live TV upgrade to your Hulu subscription and then watch live TV like we used to all take for granted.
I wonder if FX is included in that, but I'm not gonna press the point. But it's all owned by Disney. Okay, the first third of the headline we've pretty much locked down. Alex, you have something to add?
I mean, maybe it's going to be a bit of a digression here, but I think it's I just find the whole thing silly to have live TV added to these streaming services, because wasn't the original point of these streaming services to get away from live TV and commercials?
Well, it was to get away from cable, cutting the cord.
Cable,
not necessarily cutting the life.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it, but it was really getting away from a lot of these commercials and things. And now when you add these live TV options into the streaming services, you're just basically reintroducing all of these really annoying
advertising. Yeah, I'm not sure where you got that they were trying to get away from commercials, because I see nothing but commercials everywhere I look.
Well, now that's certainly the case,
yeah.
But... yeah, I know.
Okay,
yeah.
So
anyhow, keep going.
Let's try and get through this. Disney's Hulu plus live TV service and Fubo to merge. Okay, what in the name of God is Fubo? Anyone? Go ahead, Gila.
I'm guessing. I don't know, but I'm assuming it's a fast service.
What do you mean a fast service?
So there are a few various services that are known as fast programming. That's an acronym for free ad-supported television. Congratulations, folks. It's what TV is. Fast services are basically what you used to be able to get with your cable provider over the air. It's live. It's happening. Also, it's Emmanuel, you know your other pet peeve of channels that show one specific program over and over and over and over and over again?
Started with Channel 31 in New York City that Giuliani sold and to the PAX network. It was a great TV station before that, and now it just shows those crime shows 24 hours.
No, not even.
Never stops.
Like the PAX, the ION network, which is what they're called now,
yes.
They'll do a whole day of a specific program. But what I'm talking about are the streaming channels where if you want to watch Murder, She Wrote at 4 a.m. on a Tuesday, they will have Murder, She Wrote at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m. They just run Murder, She Wrote on a loop.
These are the Roku channels you're talking about.
Fubo and
what is wrong with us? Oh my God!
Tubi and Amazon Freebie.
Hold on! Nobody brought up Tubi. Let's keep them out of this.
It's another. So these are all what are called fast services, free ad-supported television.
Okay. So Disney's Hulu plus live TV service and Fubo to merge in surprise deal. Ending Venu lawsuit. Okay, for the win. Venu. Who wants this one? What is Venu? Oh, come on. Nobody knows? Nobody looked it up? Yes.
I believe it's a sports service, and I believe it's called Venu.
Well, it's spelled V-E-N-U.
I know.
How am I supposed to pronounce that?
Venu. Yeah, would it help if they had put in a hyphen?
No, it would help if they put an E like literate people do when they're spelling venue.
So if I had to guess, I would say that it's a sports-related program that is another sort of streaming situation.
Why do they care what Hulu and Fubo do together? They're consenting services. It's none of venue's business. All right, you know what? Let's read the story. Disney's Hulu plus live TV service and Fubo will merge, creating one of the country's largest pay TV providers. The companies announced this on Monday in a surprise deal that will potentially allow the venue sports streaming service to move forward. So, yeah, you were right about that. Under the terms of the agreement, Disney will own 70% of Fubo, while the TV streaming service's current management team will operate the newly combined entries led by Fubo co-founder and chief executive David Bubu. The combined... I'm sorry. I mixed that up. No, hold on. That was the wrong page. Gandler. His name is Gandler. That's somebody else. That's a different service. The combined streaming cable service will have 6.2 million subscribers, making it the second largest streaming pay provider behind only... Well, who knows? Who's number one? Guess, Gila?
I only know because I'm reading along. YouTube TV.
You didn't guess it if you're reading along. Okay, yeah, fine. YouTube TV, which you have, by the way.
Yes, we do.
And how do you rate that? I know the rates just went up.
They did. I quite enjoy it. I'm sorry to say, but I do quite enjoy it, and I'm not receiving any compensation from Google for saying this. I like it a lot. I especially enjoy the fact that I've been able to just take some channels out of my lineup. I don't even know they exist anymore. It's great.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have YouTube TV. I look at YouTube. I like to see things at YouTube. And the complaint I had early last year holds till now, where Google has completely destroyed the platform by inserting ads everywhere. I was watching Jimmy Carter lying in state. You know, a very solemn thing. And they insert a damn deodorant ad in the middle of that. I don't think C-SPAN is monetizing or looking for ads in the middle of something like that. You know, if you watch C-SPAN, they never have ads. And why would they do it there? How much could they possibly be making? But Google just throws the ads everywhere. And it's oftentimes in the worst possible places. And it's completely out of the spirit of whatever it is you're watching. And it's just a shame. It really is. Used to be a good service. Streaming services?
I don't know. I would just remind people they don't necessarily have to watch TV, or at least work on this, get it right, so that you don't waste your time with all these sorts of interruptions.
Good point.
That really make the stories and the things, the cultural artifacts you're trying to consume, impossible to enjoy. I mean, that's the crux of this. And the larger thing, I think, with them is... What does that say? I mean, is that all for their legal war chest for, like, upcoming battles? Like, how much operating costs and money and, you know, employees are they going to have to shed for their sort of non-business model, or let's say ad-supported business model, mm-hmm. that no one likes anymore? We're sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting sold out, you know? I find that itself sort of... a performance of, like, a corporate floundering, like, that they need these ads in everybody's face so badly. Like, what is your business model? What are you for? Your mm-hmm. extant operating largesse is for what? I mean, you're hosting all these videos. You're, you know, supposedly making the world's information more accessible. And... I don't really understand why them flailing about finding themselves as an entity is something we have to suffer under. And so anyway, I would just remind people, you know, books are a great way to access stories. Also radio, community radio, especially WBAI.
Yes, that's us.
Is a great example of that.
Absolutely.
And you just turn your TV off, turn other people's TV off, figure it out offline, and then... turn it back on when you can queue up stuff that just tells you the story.
Or when you can find a decent channel that doesn't interrupt everything with ads. First of all, you know what you say about Google and YouTube and all that. Yeah, it's annoying as hell, especially since they stick the ads in the middle of the content now instead of just at the beginning and the end, which I could tolerate. That wasn't you know too bad, but they're just everywhere now, and you can't focus on anything. But there's a way out, and they even taunt you with this. They say, "Are you tired of commercials? Pay us money, and we'll stop." It's literally what they say. And they claim that the money that they get from this will go to the creators of the videos. But there's absolutely no way of verifying that. And it kind of reminds me of what Amazon does to publishers, where they say, you know what, we're not going to pay you anymore, but we're going to make your content available for free to all these people, and if enough people read it, you'll get a taste. You'll get something back. It never works. You know, it sounds good. It sounds like a lot of people might be helped by this, but the only people helped are the big corporations. They're the ones that make all the money. They're the ones that basically force us to make these impossible choices where, you know, you have to pay them not to annoy the hell out of you. Now, as far as things that don't annoy you, well, I know BAI, we can be annoying with the things we say, but that's the extent of it. It's us talking. It's thoughts and ideas. And those are always going to be annoying because they're parts of conversations and debates and disagreements and things like that, and that's healthy. You will never hear a commercial on WBAI. You will never hear advertising like you hear everywhere else, especially on American TV. It is so incredibly annoying when you turn on television, and let's say you're going to CNN or something like that. Every time I turn that on, it's an ad. It's not news. You know, if you stick around long enough, it's news for about a minute, then it's more ads. That's American television. You go to other countries, it's not like that. You know, there are a bunch of channels. We've talked about this on the other radio show. Kyle and I watch Inuit TV, which is up in the north in Canada. We have a Canadian dish, so we're able to do this. It's Inuit programming. It's, you know, you might see somebody, you know, butchering a seal. Okay, that's different. Or sewing a coat, or cooking, or just telling stories or things like that. It's very different, but somehow it's really relaxing to have that on and to just, you know, check in every now and then to a different world. There's other networks that you can get here, like, you know, Turner Classic Movies, never a commercial, and always old films, things like that. You know, there are refuges from the hell of constant commercial programming being shoved down your throat. So hopefully people find those.
Those media outlets, like you said, are obscene in how much of that dominates their programming. And I'm really excited for some of the alternatives. Like you mentioned, they're actually building production facilities and starting their own journey with original content. So I think people, yeah, spend as much time making your own stuff, really, really, you know, finding a great way to share it that suits you. Because I think also with some of the self-generated streaming stuff, you have to hit certain thresholds to even begin to monetize or anything. Like, they're making you play the same. I mean, Amazon does the same thing with publishers. It's ridiculous, and you can't talk about it. And it's this whole bar that you have to abide by for really giving up and compromising yourself. You have to talk about, you know, subscribing or all of that kind of stuff. It really changes the story that you're telling. It changes the type of choices you make editing because you're trying to get people to be excited about everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, Rob, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand. It merges into your white coat there, so I didn't see it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, just on the subject of WBAI and the place of us in the media environment, you guys know what today is.
It's the day after January 6th. Oh, wait,
anniversary.
No, it's 2 days after January 6th. Wow, it seems so long ago.
Today is January 8th. This is the 65th anniversary of WBAI hitting the airwaves.
Today is the day?
Today is the day. January 8th, 1960 is when we went live.
So we qualify for Social Security now. Wow. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Medicare, certainly. That's good news. You know, we said we were going to do something special, and then we forgot this day was coming, and here it is. 65 years ago, that's when the station went on the... I wonder, does anybody, any listener out there, any really faithful listener, have a tape? Wait, they didn't have cassettes back then. How would they have taped it? Reel-to-reel, I guess. Yeah, a reel-to-reel tape of us going on the air as WBAI on January 8th, 1960. Come on, somebody must have it someplace. Somebody must have it. Wow. Or just early
Absolutely.
Recordings. I'd love to hear early recordings when the station was finding its way. Because WBAI actually turned into the first radio station to dare to ask for funds on the air. Yeah, we were the first. We started that. We started a lot of trends, but that's probably the biggest trend we started because everybody does that now. It worked, and it still works. You know, we just finished our our fund drive last month, and we came in over the goal. And, you know, I've seen summations of this. I haven't seen such positive outlooks at this place in a while. So I am really thrilled with where we're going, especially at a time like this where you're going to need a station like WBAI to counter the crap you are going to be hearing. Oh, my God. I mean, just over the last 24 hours, just the nonsense. We might be going to war with Greenland and Panama and Canada. No, and I say we. I'll be on the other side, folks. I'm not going to be on the side of whatever this is. This is what we're looking at right now. You know, it's not even January 20th yet, and already the world is you know, saying they're shocked by what they're hearing, and they don't know how to deal with it. So buckle up. It's going to be fun, and WBAI is going to be right there. I hope we have your support. I hope that we continue to spit in the face of authority.
I'm having so much fun right now.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy this is all working out. It's a big carnival ride.
It's so fun. I'm overjoyed, exuberant, effervescent with how excited and
It's going to be exciting. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you have so many, dare I say, characters out there that are really going to push the limits of our patience. You know, I'm thinking of Elon Musk particularly. What the things he is doing, or the things that he thinks he has control over, being, you know, the richest person on Earth. I mean, it reads like some kind of science fiction, second class, you know, TV drama, where you have this this evil person who is very rich, the richest person on Earth. And the whole film is dedicated to thwarting him. And we're in the film. We're going to be attempting to thwart him all the time. It never ends well for those people, by the way. It never ends well, in the movies at least. So, you know, real life, I don't know where this is going. but I don't see him getting along with Trump for very much longer. So that's going to be fun when that split happens. But
they want to find out.
Uh-huh. Zuckerberg, though, from Facebook, he's choosing the dark path lately. Have you noticed this? First they said they were going to introduce artificial intelligence all over the place, make them users and things like that with bios. And I don't know, I thought he lost his mind. But the latest thing, Zuckerberg has decided to get rid of Facebook's 40,000 moderators that basically, I guess, find things that are objectionable, false, basically fact checkers. Going to get rid of the fact checkers, content moderation team they're called, and in their place, they're basically going to have mob rule. They're going to have, you know, people decide what is right and what is wrong, what is fair, what is not. Ignoring the fact that, you know, misinformation is spread by people, and it catches on, and it develops a life of its own, and people aren't really keen on checking the actual facts. They want the narrative that they believe in, you know, and that's why, you know, you're seeing the horrible wildfires out in California right now being blamed on Democrats, because everything gets blamed on Democrats somehow. So no matter what it is, a meteor could hit us from space.
Democrats.
It's going to be Biden's fault somehow. And people are going to believe that. Now, what Zuckerberg is setting up here is a situation where that'll spread around like crazy, and there'll be nobody there to say, but the facts say otherwise. It'll be, no, these people say this, those people say that. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody is equal. And that's how the truth dies. Not in darkness, in full light.
Perfect.
Am I? You think that's perfect? Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah, okay. No, it's, sarcasm is definitely called for. Alex, I think you have a point. Go ahead.
I find this whole policy shift from Meta/Facebook to be really just kind of bizarre on so many levels. I mean, it's obviously kowtowing to the Trump administration. It's trying to curry favor with Trump, trying to cozy up to him and show that, hey, we're going to make efforts to fall in line, essentially, is really what I think the message to the administration is, and I think that's extraordinarily dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think we do also have to acknowledge that Facebook and Meta, these are not public service companies, right? They're not utilities. We shouldn't look at them like that. They're not regulated like that. And they can do whatever the hell they want to do
mm-hmm.
with their moderators or not. I mean, they're a private company, right? So they can fire all those moderators. They're mostly employees at will in the United States, I would imagine. So they can all be terminated whenever Mark Zuckerberg decides to fire them, and they are well within their rights to do that, whether it's a good decision. When there is a massive increase of misinformation, when you look at Twitter and you look at the goddamn dumpster fire that Twitter has become, and you realize that Facebook will very likely become that very same dumpster fire or a similar dumpster fire when there aren't these fact checkers and there aren't these moderators that are playing these crucial roles in combating the spread of false information. And maybe that's the point, though, because like we said last week, I think user engagement on the platform has been floundering on Facebook for some time because people, without figuring out a better or more complicated way of saying this, people have figured out that Facebook really sucks. And so now removing these moderators is going to cause more inflamed engagement between Facebook participants, which may actually generate a hell of a lot more revenue and eyeballs on the platform itself. So maybe it's a good move. It does seem like the markets have approved of this, but I think it's really dangerous. I think it's terrible, and I also think that areas outside the United States, areas that are non-English-speaking countries that have historically been overlooked by Facebook's fact-checkers and content moderators are going to be even more vulnerable than they were before. A couple of years ago, in 2600, I published an article about digital hate and misinformation about the Rohingya that had then spread into physical violence. And there were no fact checkers at Facebook to prevent this, to stop it. And there was a UN report about how this digital hate and mischaracterization of the Rohingyas as basically becoming inhuman, you know, they were referred to as rodents and various things, spilled over into actual physical violence. So this is really dangerous territory, in my opinion, that we're treading into.
I would just add to what Alex said that from a network security perspective, you become very quickly with these kinds of policies a untrusted partner in industry, and I don't know that you can really be relied upon if you don't have mechanisms and staffing, you know, entities within the organization that can take on issues regarding this. And so then you're really entertaining becoming a vector for problems that your partners in industry would actually like to see you proactively involved with, not basically a source of it. And I think it is just, you know, it, like Alex said, could be a choice for them, but it doesn't necessarily make for a better environment, and I think people have retreated because of the way people are, they see the platforms for what they are, and they use it as much or as little as they can tolerate, and then I think have found other ways. I think people are retreating to more specific ways of networking or just I guess leaving this kinds of virtual type well alone as it stands
yeah.
now without these controls, without this kind of and in the ways that it's sort of exploiting human behavior.
It's great that people leave. It's great that people say, okay, this is not for me anymore, but it's still there and it's still getting stronger. I mean, look at what's happening with Twitter. You know, Elon Musk now thinks that he can dictate who leads countries, you know, Germany and the UK and various other places.
Right.
He has no end to the amount of power he thinks he is entitled to, and Twitter has helped give him that power. And I see the same thing happening on Facebook. I mean, Zuckerberg just appointed a close Trump ally to Meta's board, and obviously more and more right-leaning people are taking control of that platform. And that, you know, as Alex said, can translate into actual, real, physical violence. We've seen it happen. We saw it happen in England late last year, where migrants were blamed for horrible crimes that they had nothing to do with. We see it here, where people are accused of eating dogs and cats when there's no truth to that whatsoever. It spreads on social media. It turns into something real. So, yeah, it's one thing to say, this is not for me anymore. I'm going to go somewhere better where, you know, people are nicer. But you have to also destroy the place that you leave, or it's going to keep growing like a cancer, and it's going to affect you in real life. So I think we all need to go back there and light the place on fire. Sorry, California, I know it's not appropriate right now, but I think that is our responsibility, is to make sure they do not have an easy time of it.
Yeah, I think that's true, because it's a synthetic public commons, really. It's basically authoritarian or other kinds of leaders or people in so-called leaders, people in power that basically create, that are in effect creating sort of a botnet that is defined as the public commons, like instead of it, as like a pseudo or synthetic public commons, instead of what people are actually thinking. And people with bad information could well contribute to all of that, whether it is, automated to a degree. But if, again, you're letting the floodgates open to machines to mix among everybody who might actually be a person, under, let's remember, the auspices of, we want to get all the bots off of Twitter. Like, that was the whole premise of the purchase of X. So, I mean, we cannot allow the actual human public commons to be replaced by botnets that benevolent fools control.
Well said. Well said. Now, moving on, the highly decorated soldier. I don't know why the media is describing a terrorist this way, but the highly decorated soldier who exploded a Tesla Cybertruck outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas used generative AI, including ChatGPT, to help plan the attack, according to Las Vegas police yesterday. 37-year-old Matthew Livesberger fatally shot himself, officials said, according to writings. He didn't intend to kill anyone else. Interesting way of not killing anyone else, driving a vehicle up and blowing it up in front of a hotel with people in front of it. I don't know why people take this at face value. An investigation of his searches through ChatGPT indicated he was looking for information on explosive targets, the speed at which certain rounds of ammunition would travel, and whether fireworks were legal in Arizona. You're going to blow yourself up in a Cybertruck in front of a hotel, and you care about whether what you're carrying is legal in Arizona? All right. Kevin McMahill is the sheriff of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. He called the use of generative AI a game changer and said the department was sharing information with other law enforcement agencies. This is the first incident I'm aware of on U.S. soil where ChatGPT is utilized to help an individual build a particular device, he said. It's a concerning moment. Well, actually, that's so untrue, I can't even begin to address it. Many devices have been built with the help of ChatGPT. In an email statement, OpenAI said it was committed to seeing its tools used responsibly and that they're designed to refuse harmful instructions. In this case, ChatGPT responded with information already publicly available on the Internet and provided warnings against harmful or illegal activities. We're working with law enforcement to support their investigation. Yes, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't condone what this person did. I don't think people should be building explosive devices. But I also don't think if someone is going to build an explosive device, it's a good idea to ask a large language model like ChatGPT how to do it. These are the same things that tell you that you can make pizza with glue and eat rocks and drink turpentine and things. This does not seem like a winning strategy from this highly decorated soldier.
Yeah, and again, you know, the fact the guy had PTSD, which is terrible, but PTSD does not make you go out and want to blow up trucks and hotels and things like that. I don't care what he says his motivations are. The guy is a terrorist, was a terrorist, and case closed. That's just because somebody was in the military and supported Trump, you know, he was a big Trump supporter, you don't get a pass for that. You know, you don't get it. It's too bad you didn't get help beforehand, but it's just typical of the way the media describes these things. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
This story, and in particular the ChatGPT angle, reminds me of issues that we had with BBSs way back in the 90s. Remember when the newspapers and things made a big stink about this, the anarchist cookbook text file being available on BBSs, and how, you know, this could allow terrorists to create thermite and various bombs and all of this information that was publicly available. I mean, look, the information is there. It's out there. It's going to be accessed one way or another.
Right.
I think that's what we've all come to realize over the last 30 years of essentially being online and having a networked life. So I think the ChatGPT angle here is really much ado about nothing, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I agree. It's basically, you know, he used an advanced search engine to get answers to questions. If that wasn't there, he would have used something else, or he would have read a book. You know, the details on how to do these things, they don't change. You know, things are still going to blow up in the same way. And people are going to use tools, you know, to get from one place to another, or, you know, to map out a place using Google Maps or whatever. These tools exist for good or for bad. So we shouldn't be so surprised when we see people using those tools. We should be surprised that people want to do this kind of thing in the first place, and that we don't seem to be able to figure out ways of getting them to not want to do that. So, yeah, that's what's happening there. Speaking of U.S. soldiers, a U.S. soldier was arrested after allegedly posting hacked Trump and Harris call logs. Yeah, basically, the United States arrested a U.S. Army soldier, charged him with being part of a hacking scheme to sell and distribute stolen phone records. Okay, you know, the way the headline read, sounded like he was just arrested after posting hacked call logs. It seems a bit much. You know, if those call logs are out there, I think we deserve to know the call logs are out there. But if you're selling them, okay, then you're stepping over into true criminal behavior there. Indictment alleges 20-year-old Cameron Wadjinis knowingly sold confidential phone records over online forums and other communications platforms last November. The incident doesn't detail the hacked material, but Krebs on Security reports that Wadjinis, okay, appears to be connected to a series of high-profile data breaches linked to the online alias Kyber Phantom. Kyber Phantom claimed to have hacked 15 telecom firms and was working with the person allegedly behind the Snowflake data breaches to sell the stolen information. You know, Wadjinis, whatever your name is, it would have been so much better if you just simply revealed the security issues here and how embarrassing it could be to certain people without trying to make a buck, without trying to, you know, basically sell this information. I think that makes it a lot harder for anyone to actually say, yeah, this was done in the public service. This was done out of an interest in security. No, it seems to have been done just to make money. And yeah, that's a shame. I'd like to know more about this. I'd like to know how this was done. I know there are a whole lot of phone companies. Almost every one of them has been hacked. And what kind of information about us are they storing? You know, our phone records. What can they find out about us? So much we can learn from these intrusions, these security breaches. But it always turns into, yeah, the person wanted to sell what they found, and they were just in it for that. Any thoughts, Alex?
I tend to agree with you here. I think this is really just misguided. It would have been really quite interesting had this been more of like a disclosure or something that could have been done as part of a bug bounty program. I think there are a lot of ways that he ethically could have divulged these vulnerabilities in a way that didn't implicate himself, didn't make it appear as if really what motivated him was entirely money. So I think this is a really unfortunate situation.
Something similar, hacker who stole and sold unreleased Coldplay and Shawn Mendes songs has been sentenced to prison. Again, that seems awfully harsh. Somebody who just was able to find unreleased Coldplay songs, and you send them to jail. I mean, you know, I think personally we should be avoiding sending people to prison. I would save prison for people who are, sex offenders, financial cheaters, people who try to overthrow the government, people like that. They belong in prison. But people who simply download music that they're not supposed to have, I don't know. Skylar Dazell, a 22-year-old from Luton, England. Oh, he made over $50,000 from the scheme. Okay, well, here we go again. Always about money. Always about money. Always about greed. Well, he pleaded guilty to stealing and selling unreleased music by artists like Coldplay and Shawn Mendes. 21 months in prison. He was accused of hacking cloud storage accounts linked to various artists and then selling the stolen tracks on the dark web. He allegedly made an estimated $52,000 from the scheme between April 2021 and January 2023, according to police. He was charged with and later pleaded guilty to 11 copyright offenses for selling items without a license from the owner, one count of transferring criminal property, and three counts of acquiring, using, or possessing criminal property. And on top of the prison sentence, he has to also complete 180 hours of unpaid work. Actually, I'm sorry, it's she. This is written really weird. It's spelled S-H-E-L apostrophe L-L. So I don't know what word that is, but I think, I have no idea. The story's very confusedly written. It's from Rolling Stone, too. I'm going to look into that. I don't know. If there wasn't money involved, Alex, what do you think the penalty would have been? You think they still would have gone to prison?
I think it's possible. I think it could all really, and it could all just entirely hinge on what judge you drew for your particular case. You know, that's really kind of the sad state of things. But it could always go down to what the judge had for breakfast that particular day when sentencing happens. Mm-hmm. But I think it would have been a hell of a lot less likely that this person would have received some kind of custodial sentence like this had there not been some kind of massive monetary gain like that. And frankly, it's not even a lot of money. I think this does seem quite disproportionate to the particular crime. But I also tend to agree with you as well, Emmanuel. I think there are way more constructive ways to deal with these particular types of individuals than to hand out custodial sentences like this.
I have confirmed a female hacker. Her hard drives contain about 290,000 tracks. Other artists affected included Melanie Martinez, Upsol, and Babe Rexha. I'm probably pronouncing all those names wrong. Authorities also found a spreadsheet detailing the track transactions, as well as PayPal and bank account statements showing how much Dalzell had made.
Always a good idea to keep meticulous records.
Keep records
criminal
when you're committing financial crimes. Yeah, how else do you keep track of it all? And, you know, I called her a hacker. Not really sure this is hacking so much. She figured out the way in. She figured out a way to compromise these systems. Yeah, there's a degree of hacking in that. But as soon as you started selling things, it's just you became something else as well. Rob?
Yeah, pretty much every popular band out there has sort of the scene among their fans that comes up of people who trade obscure stuff back and forth. It could be bootlegs, recordings of events, and, you know, maybe unreleased things that that leak out. But that's always kind of tacitly a person-to-person, non-for-financial gain sort of thing. And, yeah, I don't have much sympathy for somebody who suffers consequences just trying to get rich off of this stuff. I information wants to be free. I don't think it wants to be sold.
Right. Like the Grateful Dead just got the Kennedy Center honor, and they were talking about the whole ethos of once the music is out there, it's there to be shared. I just wanted to say I appreciated the way the Guardian phrased it. They didn't say hacker. They said dark web dealer.
Dark web dealer. Okay. Yeah, that has a ring to it. That has a ring to it. That's accurate. Yeah, it just seems like these are the kinds of stories that we always see representing the hacker world. And it's time that we push back against that and start printing the stories that are about accomplishments, that are about revelations, that are about things that are in the public service and not just for financial gain. I mean, if you really want to make a career out of it, the financial gain will come at some point. But if that is where you start, I don't think it's ever really going to progress too far for you. All right, you know what? We are pretty much out of time. But this announcement, next week we will be taking phone calls again here on WBAI. We did that once already in December, and we vowed we'd do it once a month. And it's been about a month, so we're going to do it again next week. So next week will be a call-in episode of Off the Hook on WBAI. It means we won't have overtime next week, but we will have overtime tonight. So if you've got something you really need to say to us, well, you can call in on YouTube. Yeah, I know we spent a good part of the hour trashing YouTube, but we do use it. We don't have ads on it, though. We check the box that turns the ads off. They keep trying to get us to check it off and have ads, but no, we're not doing that. Our YouTube channel is Channel 2600, one word, and you can join us there at 8 o'clock. You can write to us, OTH at 2600.com, and remember to keep supporting WBAI, because this is the radio station that will be there for you in whatever lies ahead. And I think we all really don't know what that is. See you soon. Well, we know.